The Good Neighbor Network. FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro. FM 100.5 Smyrna. And online at WGNSradio.com. This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us today, we have State Representatives Mike Sparks, Brian Terry, and Robert Stevens. How are each of y'all doing this morning?
Great. Thanks for having us on. I appreciate it.
A lot happening in the state right now. I've noticed over the past couple of weeks, the Human Rights Coalition, they've gotten a little more outspoken about different bills in Tennessee, whereas in the past, I did not hear from them as much. Now they're sending out emails left and right. The group claims that a proposed bill in Tennessee endangers LGBTQ plus youth. It says it's excluding parents who want to foster or adopt a child, but not affirming or accepting the child's sexual orientation or gender identity based on the parents' moral or religious objections. Has that even made it through the House?
I don't recall that coming.
I hadn't seen it.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes we'll get these press releases about these different bills that make it through the Senate or the House. But when you try to get to the bottom of it, it seems like these are bills that are really not discussed a whole lot.
Yeah, I think in that bill in particular, I think one of the issues is dealing with the number of people that are willing to foster. And, you know, we have basically comes, you know, the demand side is there's a lot of demand or need for it, but you don't have as many families that are out there. And so I think, you know, if people that have certain beliefs and they're, you know, if they're, they shouldn't be excluded, you know, if they're not going to affirm, because there are kids out there that, you know, could thrive in those type of families.
It sounded like you've got foster parents out there that say, you know, I do want a child to bring in, but I want to be able to kind of point the direction of what child I get in some way.
Yeah, that's. I think that's true.
Well, I think everyone, I mean, not to put down the Department of Children's Services, but they've had, you know, just last Sunday night on my show, Danny Tolleson with Turner Security, we all know Danny and Danny's close friend. And I remember Danny calling me last year about DCS, was really upset with, you know, children literally in the floors at the office. You know, they just didn't have the facilities in the room. But it's a serious issue. But going back to the root of the problem, we're seeing a breakdown in our culture. You're seeing lack of fathers, lack of families. And we as taxpayers pay for that. I've got a situation now. I'm trying to help a Miss Brenda Johnson. I've had her on the radio, and the state took three kids away from her.
Were these foster children?
No, they're her own kids. And she's got an attorney. She's trying to fight it. And I can only do so much for her. I've talked to DCS. DCS wants me to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and I refuse to sign it because I told them, I said, if I uncover some corruption, I'm going to call you out, you know, if it's bad. But my heart goes out to these DCS employees, because the challenges that we face as a culture today, Scott, it wasn't like it was when you were in school or Brian was in school or I was in school. You know, we've got a severe crisis on our hands with mental health, with drug addiction. Our culture is just, you see a breakdown. And sadly, what people don't realize, there's a price to pay. And we all pay, whether it's a shooting like two kids over here at Meg School in Nashville that no one seems to be talking about, that murder is going to cost the taxpayers $500,000 to probably $1 million to incarcerate those two young men. And that's not talking about the social emotional impact of those families. But DCS, they often get criticized, but it's like TDOC, corrections. You're never going to hear great news about corrections in the media. It's just not going to happen. You know, ECD may have great news, but the challenges we face today are pretty overwhelming, to be honest.
When you say that you are trying to help out somebody through the Department of Children's Services, that department asks you to sign a non-disclosure of anything that you find out?
Yeah. And I refuse to sign it. You know, Brenda Johnson. She was on that show with me a couple of months ago. You know, I just don't think in this day. I mean, she works as a nurse at Vanderbilt. So I've told DCS. I said, you're going to take three kids away from this mother, and she's a nurse. I mean, we need to get her fired from the VA. I mean, if we trust her with our veterans, are aging veterans, but we don't trust her with her own three kids. Something's severely wrong today.
Are there enough DCS workers?
Well, we've increased the pay substantially, but the turnover is not as what it was. But we have budgeted more money for them going back, I think, 2 years ago. So the turnover is not, it's like corrections. Corrections was a lot of turnover. And there is some turnover, but it wasn't like, it was like, I think, 58 or 60% at one time. But what I'm saying is we're having to pay for all that. That's why the budget continues to increase. And even you could say it locally, you know, you've got a jail over here that's expensive to repair, that sometimes gets crowded. You've got to pay for correctional officers. And not many folks want to go into corrections.
I would guess there's always going to be a high turnover at the Department of Children's Services and Department of Corrections just because of the stuff that these workers are dealing with every day.
Yeah, and great comment there. You know, when I talk to some of the other members that are on some of these other committees, you know, have people come testify before them and some of the things that have occurred to these kids, it's depressing. But then when you're working it and you're doing that every single day, my background, you know, obviously I'm a physician, but background's in psychology. And so, you know, when I was in undergraduate and then med school, the rotations that I did in some of these facilities, it's depressing. And you know, so you can see how they have such a high turnover. And then in today's economy, you know, with inflation and the cost of stuff, if you're working at a, you know, DCS or something like that, and there's a private job over here that's now going to offer you more, I mean, you're just seeing this turnover, and it's not like it was 20, 30 years ago.
In the media, when we hear news stories about how DCS, you know, took a child out of a home or several children out of a home, we're obviously only hearing one side of the story, because by law, DCS can't divulge, you know, this is what this child was going through or this is what happened to this child. I'm curious, when you talk to DCS, different workers there and those in charge, do they elaborate on, you know, hey, this is what's been happening? You know, these are the cases we see without naming anybody.
No, I mean, they're not going to say much, but up there in Nashville, one thing, it's kind of overwhelming with all the issues you've got before you. I mean, the mail, the folks that are coming by, it's a whirlwind. I mean, I know, you know, Robert, this is the second year, and it can be overwhelming. I remember Joe Towns out of Memphis, and he was telling me, he said, man, you're going to get overwhelmed, whether it's phone calls, emails. And so to try to deal with every situation, just pretty difficult. But I mean, not to put down DCS here on the radio, because I want to be supportive of DCS, but I literally watched a family, Harold Greider, I don't think Harold's going to mind me sharing this. They adopted two kids, and it was some fraudulent situation going on that they didn't know about. But I remember the state getting them, and I'm taking those two kids in, and they separated the kids and didn't let the Greider family have the kids back. I remember
talking to Jim Henry. Were these siblings that were separated?
Yeah. I was shocked. And I remember I was brand new as a lawmaker, and I remember going to Jim Henry, and I was so, because he was DCS chairman. It was my, I guess, third year. And you know, I was going to go to the media, and I thought, man, you know, what are we doing here? It's just disappointing. But what is so disappointing is when we see a culture erode like we're seeing. I mean, you know, I always go back to that frogs in a pot analogy. If you put a frog in a pot of water, it's going to sit there. You keep boiling up, it'll stay there. And I think as our culture, I've seen the changes. I remember how school was back in the day, and I remember at least we had respect for teachers, and, you know, we didn't get out of line. We didn't call in bomb threats at school, and we didn't, you know, go bring guns to school and shoot places up. I mean, the times have changed, but it gets back to the values, and it's really sad. I mean, the brokenness of homes. I mean, our prison budget's doubled, and one thing that really irritates me is there's not a damn lobbyist in Nashville about these issues, Scott. There's a book of lobbyists, 58 pages, 5 people per page. I'll look through that book, and there's nobody advocating for these issues, and it's really sad because we pay for those issues as a society, those costs. I mean, we all pay for it.
Who would advocate for some of these issues that deal with mental health? I mean, other than groups that maybe have some type of rehab center or even drug companies.
Well, we do have folks advocate for mental health. I'm just saying it's a breakdown of culture. You know, yeah, we've got churches involved, but very seldom will a pastor ever call me. I mean, they may preach a sermon in church, but they're not talking about these issues that we see that's breaking down. I mean, I don't see the lobbyists in Nashville coming up, but there is a strong coalition of mental health folks that do advocate.
I do want to bring up something back on, you know, who advocates locally. We have, you know, attorneys here that deal with these family issues, and they do a great job advocating for that, and I've had them bring me ideas because of concerns that they've had. And then, you know, you sit down with DCS, you're trying to work through that issue, get a bill going, and you realize that a lot of times their hands are tied due to stuff at the federal level. And so it's not just dealing with local and state. There's some stuff at the federal level that needs to be changed as well. And so it's throughout the whole system.
And when you go back to foster care and the foster care system and talk about some parents who say, well, I don't want a child that says they identify as a male when they're a female or vice versa, it seems like that would be the wrong direction to head, because a lot of that is, well, it deals with mental problems right away. And if you start saying, well, I'm not going to take a child that has this mental issue, but I will take this child, it seems like that's going to cause even more problems, because I can't imagine the depth of mental problems that some of these children have because of things they've suffered through.
Yeah, and to that point, I do want to bring up, there was a back in Oklahoma, actually at where my wife went to high school in Owosso, there was a, I guess she was trans and she ended up committing suicide. And that was something that now the story's coming out. She was abused and it was suicide. But, you know, the news brought out that they thought it was because of the trans issue. And it turns out that there was a lot other stuff going on, and the school couldn't speak to that. So there's always mental health issues. There's other stuff behind the scenes that you just do not know what people are actually dealing with. Even like the Covenant shooter, that's 1 year anniversary, and some of the stuff that's out there, you know, we may know some of the stuff that was out there, but you know, the entire manifesto's not been released, and so there's issues that you know, obviously that the shooter had that impacted that as well.
I can't imagine the depth of trauma some of the kids out there have faced who are in the foster care system.
That's like I said, I still remember going back to when I was med school doing one of my psychology rotations at a children's facility, and just some of the stories that those kids have had to go through. I feel blessed,
man,
every single
blessed.
Day.
We are blessed. So. You know, I met with 3 or 6 women in the state prison about 3 weeks ago, a month ago. And y'all know Heather, dark hair girl. And she invited a couple of us out there. And Ed Butler, Elaine Davis was out there. And I asked the 3, and they're all facing 51 years, I mean, for murder. But one killed her aunt. She was 14 and a half. And I thought, man, I didn't know you could charge a 14-year-old with, give her a 51-year sentence. I was just shocked. But, you know, I got talking to that girl. I said, where do y'all find hope? I mean, hope's a real word. I mean, hope, we find hope. And I kind of felt bad asking them, you know, because they're facing 51, you know, they're in there for 51 years. And they all finished their degree, I think, except for one. And they found hope in their friends. They found hope in helping other inmates. And I asked them all, I said, how many of y'all were sexually abused? You know, just point blank. And 3 hands went up immediately. 1 hand went up slowly. And not that I know much about human behavior, but the hand that went up slowly, I thought, yeah, she was probably abused by a dad or a grandfather, in my, you know, or an uncle or something like that. And there's a strong correlation between childhood sexual abuse and drug addiction, alcoholism, and even those that's incarcerated. I'd argue about 80% probably of females in state custody were sexual abuse, and there is trauma from that. The ACEs situation is real. It really is. You know, 10 years ago, I'd have never, or 12, 14 years ago, I'd have never thought these issues or where they're at today. You know, like us talking about the game of chess or critical thinking skills and music therapy, I'd have never thought I'd talk about those things.
Well, you bring the ACEs, that's adverse childhood experiences, and that's a major issue and a major problem that you do have, and it impacts brain development. There was, I guess it was mental health and substance abuse. So several years ago, they came and testified in front of the health committee, and they're showing like PET scans of brains of people, and depending on, you know, the normal brain development versus those that have had abuse and from the ACEs. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, prefrontal cortex and the, you know, your Mike's looking at me.
I'm looking at him like, okay, I don't know all that stuff.
But, okay. But anyway, your executive function skills and the ability for you to, you know, as for your brain to develop these type of thinking skills, you know, if you are in a high stress situation where it's abuse or something like that all the time, you know, it just doesn't impact you then. It impacts you lifelong. Yeah. And some of the decisions that, you know, you and I may think, you know, this is, it's natural. Well, they can't.
You know, I was talking with somebody this morning, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, Scott, because I guess I am. And forgive me if I am, if I'm putting you on the spot. But, Scott, you've had a lot on you. Let's face it. I mean, I asked you like 2 months ago. I said, Scott, how do you deal with all these things? You know what you told me?
You got a lot on
you. You know, you said, Mike, it's called life.
Yeah, well, it's true.
You just move on.
But when you're a child and you go through something where, let's say, your mom's boyfriend lives there and she and being beat every single day by the guy who she wants you to call stepdad.
Yeah.
And you see that like day in and day out, you know, it like Brian Terry, you were saying, it almost, it sounds like it just freezes the development of that child where they are at that age. So if they're 10, when that is continuing to happen, then, you know, 20 years from now, they're still making the decisions that a 10-year-old would make in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, if you don't, I mean, like the brain, they say, technically develops up until about age 25. But if you have stunted growth in your development and those neural pathways from all this stress and the type of environment that you're in, and then we see as a society the long-term ramifications that we see impacted, but just, you know, if you think of the individual that's there, you know, how do you get them out of that environment? How do you get them into an environment that helps them? And that's one of the things that I mean, it's if we could figure out how to do that, you know, that would solve a lot of the world's problems. Exactly. But it's
and then Mike, going back to you with the female prison population, when you walk into that prison, start talking to some of those who are prisoners there, is their level of understanding, does it come across as, you know, well, this is almost a juvenile way of thinking and trying to figure out things?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go back, like, I used to think I had a hard time growing up. You know, we were on the free reduced lunch program. I had to walk to school. But I used to think, man, a mile and a half's a long way or a mile is a long way. Looking back, I'm like, man, I thank Jesus I didn't have to ride on a school bus for 2 hours. You know what I mean? So at that time, you know, you think, oh, man, why is my dad so hard? Why am I working at 13 years of age to buy a car? And, you know, but you look back and think, thank you, Lord, I had to work at 13. Thank you that I had to save money. Thank you that they taught me those lessons. But today, I mean, if you don't, in my opinion, if you don't have a father in the house, man, and nobody talks about that. That's what I'm saying. Nobody lobbies for those issues of the fatherless. It's like it's almost politically incorrect to talk about, but you know, thank God. I mean, you know, we're all blessed. I mean, that's why I mentioned State Capitol of the day. About, you know, I went to the Juvenile Correction Center in Nashville, and, you know, 20-foot tall fence out there, barbed wire, and talking to these young guys. And, you know, one kid, you could tell he didn't want to be there, but the rest of them were at least eating Chick-fil-A and had food, so they were excited. And it was like a little church thing. And I talked to this kid, and I was like, hey, man, he was just real quiet. I said, hey, man, we got this idea of the game of chess and, you know, teaching chess in school. And that kid perked up. He goes, man, I know how to play chess. He was real, like, excited. He said, yeah, I think there's a merit there, you know, critical thinking skills, get people to think before they move and before they steal a car, before they carjack somebody, before they take that pill that's laced with fentanyl, but before they get drunk and do something crazy. And here's what was cool, Scott. And the kid, before I left, he said, will you pray with me? I was shocked. He said, will you pray with me? I was like, yeah. And he said, you coming back? And I think I went, you know, I didn't see him last time I was there, so I guess he's already out. But the cost involved with these kids, people don't realize the fiscal impact to taxpayers. I mean, the Kyle Yorlett murder, the two kids killed him with a stolen gun. That's easily $600,000 right there to incarcerate those two kids, not to mention the cost, the social-emotional cost of those families that have lost those, Kyle and the mother. But if you go back and study that story, I think it was Channel 5, Phil Williams, mm-hmm. He did go back to the root of the problem. The mother was crying out for help and was getting no help. And I just think we got to turn it around somehow, man, and get more advocates involved with these things. Because running more laws, I see people run a bill and it's like, we're increasing. I'm like, you never get to the root of the problem. And it's the brokenness of these homes. And I don't know, man. We had coaches growing up. We had teachers that got involved in our lives. And I know it's there, but the biggest complaint I hear with teachers is the mental health is a childhood behavioral issues.
But how do you lobby for a better understanding of psychology and how a brain works and how a brain develops? I mean, that's just something
that's
you can't
a question for Dr.
simply
Perry.
Lobby for.
Well, I mean, obviously we have, the mental health and substance abuse and, have discussions with them, their advocates, all their contacts that they have, having them come up and I think one of the best ways that can be lobbied is, self-governance. And, having families, having individuals that reach out to us, that have a story. Yeah. That's, if you have an attorney, I mean, there's attorneys that I talk to here that deal with this type of of issues, and they reach out. In fact, one of the judges reached out about some of the issues that we're having. And it's a, like I said, it's a demand side. We have all these people that need help, but supplying them with
that help. I was really proud. I'm on the insurance committee, and we had a bill, and Brian probably more familiar with them. It's the maximizers on the insurance and AFPs, and it was complicated bill. And somebody made the comment that the sponsor didn't even understand the bill. It's so complicated. But here's what was cool, because you're listening to all this testimony, and I'm trying to make sense of it, trying to do research while the bill's being presented. And I heard some other folks on the elevator, okay? And after we voted, and you had two lobbyists for Big Pharma that came up, and another lobbyist, he was, yes, supporting Ryan Williams' bill. And don't tell him I said it, you know, understand the bill. But anyways, and then two other Big Pharma lobbies. And then a mother spoke, a mother who had a son that was, how do you say it? Hemophilia. How do you say the blood?
Hemophilia. Yeah.
Okay. And she was testifying, and the committee passed it. And I heard someone in the elevator said, when the lobbyists are against the bill and the mother's for it, I know it's the right thing. So the media is never going to tell you that stuff. But I was really proud of the committee. I think it was not Iris. Who's the other? The blonde girl. The blonde.
Esther?
Esther. It was Esther. I heard her say that in the elevator. And I thought that was cool. I didn't listen to the lobbyists at Big Pharma. I listened to the mother because she knew best.
Again, with us this morning, we have State Representatives Brian Terry, Robert Stevens, and Mike Sparks.
We are broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Download the MyMTE app in Google Play or in the iTunes Store and keep up with your electric usage.
The free app gives you better control of your power consumption and provides the ability to see exactly how much electricity you use.
Simply search for MyMTE today.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
Adams Place has been a wonderful place. I'm Greg Shannon. I ride a bike, so I keep my bike on the patio. It's easy to get in and out, and water aerobics, like I said, and then they have stretch and balance to help you, because us old people, we fall a lot. So she's trying to teach us how to keep from falling and to, protect yourself and be careful and be smart,
I'm Terry Deal. Call me about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
If you're looking for an authentic relationship with financial experts who genuinely care about your unique needs, Capstar Bank is for you. Capstar Bank is dedicated to the people of this community. Capstar Bank wants to help you reach your financial goals. Because at Capstar Bank, you matter to us. Capstar Bank, 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, capstarbank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, and streaming at WGNSradio.com.
Again, with us this morning, we have Tennessee State Representatives Brian Terry, Mike Sparks, and Robert Stevens. We've got a phone call that's patiently been holding, so let's go ahead and go to that phone call real quick. Good morning, you're on WGNS.
Hey, good morning. This is Connie Reguli out of Williamson County. I am so happy that we have are talking about families this morning. I've talked to Mike several times, and I've spoken in the committee where Mr. Stevens was, and I have met Mr. Terry before. It's been a while. But I really want to thank them for talking about these family and foster care issues. There is so much money involved in this whole foster care because it's become so privatized. And, you know, I've also been a prosecutor. I've prosecuted child abuse. I know there's real child abuse. But the one thing that we really need to understand generally is that 85% of the kids that end up in the foster care system are not there because of physical or sexual abuse. It's because of this neglect term. And about 40% of the kids, there's some type of underlying substance abuse. And that's one of the things that we have got to take really serious in Tennessee. You know, if we started really putting money into what do we need to do to help families struggling with substance abuse, I think we would begin to see some changes.
When you said 85% are there because of neglect and substance abuse, are you saying that the family, the substance abuse from the parent? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, so they kind of lump the substance abuse all together. There is the child and the parent. Most of it is parent substance abuse. But these are, you know, there are national statistics that are published every year about why children end up in foster care. And that 40% number is just, you know, within 2 or 3 percentages is the same year after year after year. And as an attorney who, like, for 30 years, I walked into courtrooms all across the state of Tennessee. I've been in 45 of the counties. I've seen these families struggle. You know, we also know that still 1 out of 5 kids in Tennessee are living in poverty. You know, there's a lot of environmental neglect. There's a lot of things that we are not really looking at. What do we need to do in these communities to help these families? And if you look at overall, and I pulled out all the counties, looked at all the statistics for crime and poverty and employment. And, you know, the counties that have the highest unemployment and the most criminal and the most crimes related to substance and drugs are the ones that are losing the most children. So, you know, I know a drug addict cannot raise a child. I know that that is a problem.
Yes.
But I also know that the trauma of separation is one of the ACEs traumas. And if we continue to just separate the child from the parent instead of what do we need to do? How do we need to go back? What are the precursors? How can we help? Then, you know, we really need to, we've got to focus on what are those problems. And you're right. Nobody lobbies for it because there's no money in helping families be better. And I go up there and I speak, and I've spoken about 6 times this year, and some of the bills that we've passed this year are worse for families than they are better. And I'm very, very, very concerned about this at-risk boarding school. I spoke this week in the Education Administration Committee, and it has passed. It has passed through the Senate. It's going to the floor. But basically, we're going to take, you know, all teenagers who have a, who are vulnerable, really, teenagers with learning disabilities, truancy, pregnant, parenting, you know, if they've ever been in a juvenile detention center, which basically means they could have spent one night in a juvenile detention center. And we're going to create taxpayer boarding schools with no criteria on it. What are they going to do for these kids? We don't even know. I am so frightened about this. Institutionalizing people does not work. It does not work. We know that now for centuries. So I just pray for y'all that y'all just, as lawmakers for Tennessee, you just really go out there. I'm so glad you went to the prison. I wish you would have asked those female prisoners how many had been foster children, because it is now a generational problem.
Yes. Are you willing to talk about, you know, I mentioned the Brenda Johnson situation. Are you willing to, can you talk about that?
Yes, and I did communicate with Brenda this morning, and she's given me permission to share that story. But, you know, Brenda is, she's a good example of how everything went wrong. Yeah. And Brenda's out of Rutherford County. She's a single mom. She's raised her children on her sole income. She doesn't get child support. She has three children. She has a job. She doesn't use drugs. She works for the federal government. And she had attendance issues with her two teenage children. And it had to do, and nobody really got in and investigated this, but there were some bullying issues going on with where her daughter was concerned, and it was causing a lot of problems. And then sort of the flashpoint, though, sadly, was Brenda's mother in Atlanta became critically ill, and she had, as a single mom, she had to pick up all three kids and take them with her, and she notified the school. But that seemed to be the flashpoint where they went and they took a truancy warrant against Brenda, and then for this one child, and then they took all three of her children and put them in DCS custody, including her one-year-old baby.
Wow.
Those children have now been in foster care for over a year. Her baby has been in at least four or five different placements.
Yes.
Her baby's arm was broken. He's had two emergency trips to the hospital, all in foster care. The kids are all separated.
Real quick, what's the cost of the taxpayers on that situation?
You know, all of her children have probably now been, their classification has probably been hired. So when children are put in foster care, they classify them. I mean, the whole thing is so bizarre if you sit and you think about it from a New World Order perspective. But the children have levels, and the higher the level is, the more money they are worth.
So roughly $6,000 we're paying for that mother who got separated, those kids got separated from that mother. About $6,000 a month to the taxpayers.
Well, just for the children. That's not including all the other expenses, all the medical, you know, everything.
Yes.
At a minimum.
I can't imagine. How do you fight this stuff at the state level in figuring out what to do next, what law to pass, how to go about deciding if a child should go to a required boarding school? I mean, is it at that level where the state is looking at actually sending children who are juvenile delinquent in some way to a boarding school?
Oh, yes. This bill, HB 2922, and it even says, listen, the bill even says if they've been adjudicated as delinquent or they are awaiting being adjudicated as delinquent. So they don't even have to have, I often say children have no constitutional rights. They are treated worse than adults. It says if they've ever been in a juvenile detention center, which I know from practicing for 30 years, if a kid is picked up for an unruly, they may spend the night in a detention center and then go home the next morning to their parents. But the way this bill is written, even if they just get mad at their parents and they end up spending the night in a detention center, they can be in an at-risk. Now, the committee says, and the sponsor says, this is 100% voluntary, that only if the parent wants them to go to the boarding school. But I'm telling you, this will become an involuntary internment for teenagers. This is, I watch state bills all over the country. This is the worst thing I have seen. They tried to do it last year in HB 1214. It got shut down. They snuck it in this year under a caption bill. I just happened to catch it. And this is horrible. This is so bad.
Well, thank you for calling this morning. Time right now, 8:52. Again, state representatives in studio with us this morning include Brian Terry, Robert Stevens, and Mike Sparks. So what do you guys say about all of that? That's a lot to take in.
Well, you know, I'm not on the committee that goes through, but I mean, it just is an example of the challenges that we face and the challenges DCS faces and ultimately the taxpayers pay for it, you know. I wish I had all the answers. I don't, but that's why we need more advocates to be involved in the whole process. I mean, maybe she's wrong, maybe she's right, but until you decipher all the information and take it all in, it's, you know, to make those tough decisions. But, you know, I think every lawmaker, like I challenged them all on that floor of the day, everyone needs to go visit a juvenile detention facility. Listen to those kids. Listen to what's going on. Yeah, some of them probably need to be there, but a lot of them are, the vast majority are from the brokenness and broken homes, like she mentioned. And then this drug problem is, it's an epidemic. It's not like we think we got a drug problem. No, it is a crisis. It's an epidemic.
Well, yeah, from her talking about the neglect and the substance abuse, and if you're up there at all and you talk with the TBI or, the amount of, we've actually, from the 10 together bill for opioids, the prescriptions have gone down, our MME has gone down significantly, yet we're still having, the overdoses, and a lot of it's, it's coming from the cartels, the fentanyl coming through the border. And then not on top of that, I think Tennessee is third in the nation in marijuana, illicit marijuana, yeah. And then meth has made a comeback, and
it's so bad.
Cycles.
I was in finance, and I got to ask General Ross about the intel. This is what I've been told by an undercover agent: Venezuelan, Chinese, Syrian, Hamas coming across the border illegally. I talked to him after. He didn't say much in committee. Fox 17 covered it. But when I was with TBI director, his own stepson passed away, overdosed and passed. The TBI director. That's how bad it is.
There are so many problems to tackle that, where do you begin? And if you do stuff like outlaw some of these pain medications out there, then have there been studies yet to see, if we decrease the number of pain medication prescriptions that are being written each month, are we seeing an increase on the flip side of it in drugs being brought across the border and fentanyl being sold on the street? What's happening?
Well, so and that was something that Speaker and I, when he was the chairman of health and I was the sub chair when TN Together was coming through, that was our biggest concern. And we stood, basically it was like 6 or 8 weeks, we stood in the way of the original bill, because it was going to be more criminalizing patients, I felt like. And so what we put in there were, it was more patient specific, that you could get the pain medicine, because I knew that if you cut people off, where are they going to go? They're going to go to the street. Yeah. And as it turns out, the CDC came back and they revised their recommendations to basically mirror what we already did in Tennessee. And so when we were at the inauguration for Governor Lee, I ran into Governor Haslam and had that discussion with him, because that was one of his initiatives, that the CDC is agreeing with us what we did back then. And so and then we just passed something yesterday on the floor, Doc Kumar's bill dealing with opioid alternatives, so that they're not disadvantaged in TennCare, and so that we can prescribe those medications so that you don't get people on opioids. And so those are some of the things that we've done with that.
And then the House bill that she mentioned, was it 2922? What did she say about the boarding school?
It's a type of a charter school. It's called an opportunity school. And in the way the bill is worded, it's voluntary. The parent wants their child to go to this school, and you have to fit a certain criteria to qualify, which she did list. You have to be someone who's been in juvenile detention before, a pregnant, there's all these criteria for students that could qualify for those schools, but the parent has to choose for the child to go there.
Sounds like a scary proposition. Eventually, I could see where it could lead to, now this child's required to go to this boarding school, which separates them from a parent, which is going to cause even more problems.
I guess it could. I'm not on that committee, but I think one of the things that they're, looking at is the environment that they were in. And I think that the thing that we would have to look at is, what environment does this kid go into? I mean, so I'm not sure how.
Kind of a strange environment overall, it seems like, in today's times.
I wish we'd send them all in the military. Young man used to go in the military, and everybody I know went to the military. Turned out pretty good. Or bust their tails. That's what my dad would have done. But we just have a lot of challenges. I mean, there are. But you asked about salt. One, you got to have a discussion. That's one thing that Scott, you and Brian and your dad does, is bring the discussion to the table. I wish we had more discussion. I wish the county commission discussed, the social emotional issues and the mental health issues more. We just can't wait till we get in General Assembly to try to solve these problems. We got to solve these problems daily.
It seems like, and this sounds silly, but doing things like bringing in different types of motivational speakers to each school, of speakers who have been through, the hard times before.
Well, like you remember, you and I went to the Lunch Buddies. Remember that?
Yeah,
that was a long time ago. We just got to get back to those days.
Just bringing in more people who volunteer their time to go out there and speak to children, to speak to teenagers, and say, this is what you may be going through, but this is what you could turn this into and yeah. you know, become. You could become a child psychologist. You could help others. I mean, just
coaches and
giving
mentors,
ideas.
Yeah, coaches, mentors, those teachers. And the irony with me, you know, I got paddled a lot back growing up back in school, and everybody that paddled me, they were my favorite teachers. Mr. Rakes, Mr. Odom, Miss Barnes, Paula Barnes, and all those people, because I knew they cared. And we respected that, but you know, we were mischievous and got out of line. But anyways, the mental health issues and child behavior is off the charts. The school board, Katie Darby, thank you, Katie, for calling me this week about that issue.
I didn't have the same love for my teachers that paddled me ultimately. Thank you all for joining us this morning. And if anybody has questions, they want to send you an email, they want to call you, where can they find that contact information?
The General Assembly website has all of our email addresses, phone numbers, addresses, office suite numbers. It's all there for people to find if they want to find it.
Again, with us this morning, we've had state representatives Mike Sparks, Robert Stevens, and Brian Terry. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you very much.
More news is coming up, and we'll post this show as a podcast in just a few minutes at WGNSradio.com.